Okay. I have the recording going.
All right.
So, Mr. Jones, I want to thank you for agreeing to do this interview with us today. And my name is Francina Turner. And of course, I'm conducting an oral history interview with Daryl Jones for the Reparative Histories and the Black Experience at UMD Oral History Project. And so, Mr. Jones, I want to start with, what's your hometown?
My hometown is Glen Burnie, Maryland.
Okay. And what's your birthday?
Birthday is July 20th, 1964.
Okay. How would you describe your life before you came to UMD in terms of like family composition, education, things of that nature?
Very positive. I think, I came from a family of educators. So my grandparents were educators. My parents were educated, college educated. And sister, brother, everyone pretty much was expected to go to college growing up. It was just, not something that was unexpected, but was something that was that was expected for us as we moved along throughout our grammar school and secondary school, post high school. Obviously, we were expected to go to college.
How did you make the decision to go to the University of Maryland?
I did not start at the University of Maryland College Park. My sister, it was the eldest of three children, she selected Maryland. And so she went to Maryland first during the 70s. After that, when it was my time to go and select the university, I was looking at various colleges. And my mother, who went to the University of Chicago, wanted to go to an HBCU and did not have that opportunity. Because her parents, she was out of the Chicago area. And so she was instrumental in me selecting actually the University of Maryland Eastern Shore to begin my my college experience so that at least one of her children would have gone through an HBCU. While I was at Maryland Eastern Shore, I decided after my second year to transfer over to the University of Maryland at College Park. And that decision was brought about because I felt as though I had gained a lot from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and my professor, my guidance counselor at the time, had encouraged me to move over to University of Maryland College Park from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, feeling as though I would get a much broader experience at College Park.
And what year did you transfer over?
1984, I transferred over to College Park.
And so
82 to 84, I was at UMES, and then 84 to graduation, 87, I was at College Park.
Okay. And how did you go about selecting a major?
Interesting question. I had always had a very keen interest in history. And so my major throughout my college undergraduate career was history. At the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, I majored in history. And then once I transferred to College Park, I majored in history and then concentrated in Latin American studies, but staying in the liberal arts arena.
Walk me through, if you can, your earliest memories of coming on campus as a new student.
Yeah, coming on campus to College Park as a new student, from my perspective, was very different. And that's because I came from the perspective of initially going to University of Maryland Eastern Shore. My initial entree onto the Eastern Shore, I had no idea, no concept of what a predominantly African-American college or university would look like, because everything I had experienced, I was always one of maybe two African-Americans in my classroom from first grade until graduation from high school. So initially going to University of Maryland Eastern Shore, where it was the exact opposite of what I had experienced, was really just an eye-opening experience. So having gone through 2 years of college, having experienced that and being so well doctrinated into the African-American history and African-American experience, I then transferred over to College Park, where again, transposed to the situation where I then again became a minority population within the larger university context. So walking onto the campus, rather than having the unsighted experience of understanding a lot of the Black cultural experience from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, I was now awakened and alert as to differences in how people were perceived, how people were treated, and the demands that should be made for the equality and treatment. So when I came onto College Park's campus, I already had that heightened awareness that had been instilled in me. And so once I got to College Park, I immediately went into the mode where I was identifying with the African-American students that were there, trying to be certain that we had a core group of people that were supportive of one another. And that proved to be really instrumental. While I was there, we actually restarted, I was the president, actually restarted the NAACP chapter at the University of Maryland at College Park. I can recall that once we started this NAACP chapter, we then formed an alliance and affiliation with the Black Student Union, as well as with the African Student Union. And it was a very strong alliance. During that period, there was so much that was going on, and this would be the early 80s. And so at that point, University of Maryland was still investing in companies that were doing business in South Africa during the apartheid period. And we got together, the student leaders, the presidents of those three major organizations got together, built shanty towns and took stands to demand that the university divest from its interest in South Africa. So there was a lot of that that went on, and we were in place and, you know, marching on the administration, the administration, the president's building, demanding that they do this, demanding that they step it down. We brought, you know, Louis Farrakhan on the campus to talk about it. We brought, Kwame Ture onto the campus to talk about it. So we had a lot of activity that we were a part of. We became very vocal with regards to African-American causes. We understood during the 80s that what we identified as what we called it a revolving door of the African-American student experience, where the university would admit in many African-American students that may not be completely qualified on paper to be able to survive, or would not provide them with the necessary support to be able to matriculate through the system. It became a revolving door. They would bring them in, they would get the funding for them, they would not give them the social support, the educational support that they needed, and then they would kick them back out. They would not matriculate through the system, and they bring in a whole new group and start doing the same thing. So part of what we tried to do was to be the stop in the door, that door stop, to say, you know, no, we're not going to let this door revolve. You know, what we want to do is we want to build an infrastructure that's in place to support the students that are being brought in, so that they can, you know, certainly have the opportunity to learn what university life is like, to understand the stresses that are associated with being a Black student at the University of Maryland College Park, and how to cope with it and survive.
I want to back up a little bit. You said that you restarted the NAACP chapter at UMD. Mm-hmm. What made that something you were interested in doing?
I think that once we were on the campus, and I had always been a very strong supporter of the NAACP, coming out of, you know, Maryland Eastern Shore, particularly, you know, we had a lot of interaction. We had a very strong student chapter of the NAACP. When we were on College Park's campus, a couple of friends and I, Laurie Harris, along with Lonta Evans, got together and said, we need to restart this NAACP. Enola McMillan, who was a very strong supporter of the NAACP out of Baltimore, was key in terms of having us understand what the NAACP was all about and what we would be able to do and what we are capable of doing as a student chapter. And so we restarted that chapter. We opened that chapter, I guess you could say, after years of inaction. We restarted the chapter in 1984, 1985. And from there, we just try to do as much as we can to be certain to push forward on the African-American student experience and making it better and forcing the university to deal with issues and concerns of the African-American student.
You also expressed that you'd been a part of the alliance who worked with divestment from South Africa. What made that something you were interested in getting involved in? Because there, you know, there are students who don't.
You know, it was really interesting because, you know, we were also working with the Student Government Association, who at that point had not had a Black president of the Student Government Association. And one of the things that we did was that we just, there was a natural click of a leadership friendship. And that leadership friendship was Mariola Nguza, who was from the African Student Association, Ed Martin, who was the president of the Black Student Union, and myself. And we just clicked intellectually, we clicked philosophically, we clicked, and in terms of where we wanted to go, we all clicked. And we worked hand in glove to be certain that, you know, the interests of the Black students at the University of Maryland, at that point, one of those interests being demanding that the school divest from South Africa and its holdings in South Africa. And, you know, we worked, you know, late into every night, it seems, trying to make that happen and galvanizing the student, the Black student support and white student support too, to that issue. So, you know, we weren't completely focused just on Black students, but the Black student experience was our interest. And if there were other students that that shared that interest, we welcomed them in. But to be clear that, you know, the reason that we focused on Black student interest and the Black student experience was because we were Black students trying to survive and wanted to certain be certain that we cleared a way so that the students coming in behind us could pick up where we've left off and what where we had began to open a trail to be able to make it even smoother and easier for other African-Americans that were coming behind us.
And you also mentioned the shanty towns that you all built as a part of your organizing against the investments in South Africa. How did you all come to the decision to build the shanty towns?
Well, you know, during that time, there were shanty towns being built at many of the colleges and universities across the country, particularly those that that had investments in South Africa. And the idea, the concept, was to identify with what the experience was with the Blacks in South Africa. And so we decided to do the shanty towns and did it right on the mall, McKeldin Mall, there at the university, and held a major rally during that shanty town experience. And the whole concept was to focus the university, number one, the university student, on the experience of what's happening in South Africa, to raise the awareness. And then number two, to let the university know that we see what they're doing. And we want them to address this, that this, as you hurt the Black in South Africa, is as you hurt the Black in the United States, is as you hurt the Black that's at the University of Maryland in College Park. And we did not want any part of it. We didn't want our monies going toward the investments that are happening in South Africa, because we understood that the money that our university was investing that dealt with businesses in South Africa also dealt with the suppression of our people that were in that country. And that's what we were raising.
How did you, how do you recall or feel about the university's response to your organizing and protest efforts around that issue?
Initially, they tried to blow us off, thinking that it was just going to blow over. There's just some students blowing off hot air. We continued with the protest. It didn't stop. It continued. And then we marched on the university president's office. And then I think it was at that point that they were finally willing to talk with regards to working something out and trying to negotiate something to try to get us to calm down, because we weren't calming down. We were heating up. It wasn't going to calm down. You know, we were going to do whatever was necessary, because we understood the line that existed from what the university was doing in investing to what South Africa was doing with the money they've received and suppressing the people in South Africa. So there was not going to be any letdown. There wasn't any slowdown. And it was what forced the university to divest ultimately from businesses that were doing business in South Africa.
Did that divestment happen while you were still a student at UMD?
It did happen by the time we left, we were divesting from South Africa.
So can you tell me a little bit about when it got to the point where divestment was happening, what was that like as a student who had been organizing for divestment?
It was a great feeling for us to see it happening, but it wasn't, we didn't stop there. I guess the spirit of the movement got to us with regards to what we can do when we work together and move as a group, as a unit, as a coalition. I can recall that I believe it was must have been around 85, 86 or so, that the university wanted us to participate in their homecoming parade, and that they're trying to make these efforts to now become more inclusive and more and involve Black students in the homecomings and things that they were doing. Well, the problem they had with that was that they decided that their theme for this homecoming was going to be the 1960s and the University of Maryland in the 1960s. And that's what they were going to celebrate. They wanted the theme to be all around the 60s. Well, when they presented it to us, the NAACP and other groups, we sat down and we thought about this. And we said, we're going to be a part of this because they've asked us to be a part of it. But they weren't getting what they were asking. University of Maryland wasn't integrated in the 1960s. So they're asking us to be a part of something where we could not have been a part at the University of Maryland. So, we told them we were going to participate. We said, yes, we will participate. And what we then did was we put a cloud of secrecy and quietness around what we were going to do for our float, because we're going to do their little float and everything they're going to do, march it around the campus, have the person announce at the grandstand all about the float. And so we did put together this float. And on the float, we put a huge sign at the base of the float that said, University of Maryland, 1960s, where were we? And then there was a street sign that came up from the float with different signs on it. And it said Bowie State, Morgan State, Howard University, all the universities where we could be admitted. And then on the bottom, it said, Black students were not admitted into the University of Maryland during the 1960s. And raising their awareness once again that they were being insensitive to the experience of the Black student, to ask us to participate in something that we didn't exist at the university at that time. So, it was one of those things where we were trying to force the university to have some sensitivity to the Black student and the Black student experience there at College Park.
How did the student body or the administration react to the float?
Can't say how the administration reacted because we really didn't care. Mm-hmm. They didn't care how we reacted to, trying to be included in something where we were excluded. So, mm-hmm. To say that we were going to concern ourselves with, whether we were hurting their feelings or if they were upset, we could care less. Mm-hmm. What we did care about was raising the awareness of the administration, raising the awareness of the students to say, we will stand up, we will be recognized, we will force inclusion, if necessary, into the University of Maryland system. And that's what we were pushing forward on. And I think we were successful to that degree, because certainly it was the talk amongst the university, amongst the students, amongst the faculty. We were very successful in that regard. Our faculty advisor actually, during that period, was Otis Williams from the Nimboro Cultural Center. And Otis was just a tremendous supporter of all the actions that we were taking. Whenever we felt as though, we're in shaky ground or questionable ground, we would go and ask him, are we off here? Is it something that we need to know? And, he would, for the most part, give his blessings and say, keep doing what you're doing, keep riding the ship. You're on the right track. And that's what we would do.
I know that you were the president of the NAACP. Did you hold official leadership positions in any of the other organizations on campus?
No other official positions with any other organizations that were on campus.
Okay. Now, of course, I see your paddle behind you.
So,
At which institution did you become a member of Alpha Phi Alpha?
I actually joined a graduate chapter. I would have Upsilon Lambda, which is the Montgomery County chapter, which is the chapter that actually was supervising the University of Maryland's chapter, Iota Zeta.
Okay. You mentioned that you all brought Farrakhan and Kwame Ture to campus. Can you talk to me a little bit about those decisions and what those what it was like to witness those speakers give talks on campus?
I think that, having Minister Farrakhan was an experience because it was a learning experience for all of us in terms of what we were going through and what we were learning. To that degree, it had that impact. It additionally raised the sensitivity to trying to understand the Muslim experience, the Christian experience, the Jewish experience, and putting all of that together because, we certainly had a lot of supporters that were Jewish as well. With Kwame Ture, when he came to campus to speak, I think it was similar. It was really sort of hard hitting and what we were learning from him as well. And, I believe Dick Gregory was the other person that we had. And Dick Gregory, one of the stories that Dick Gregory would tell, and I believe it came from our University of Maryland experience. One of the things that Dick Gregory would say was that he could recall during the civil rights movement that he was on the front door with the other Black leaders, and they were pushing and pushing on the door that had been closed and shut to African-American inclusion. And then once they began to see a crack in the door and a little light that was coming out, he would turn to tell everyone, there's a crack in the door, we're getting it open, come on, we're gonna go through. And when he turned, everybody was gone because they were afraid because the door was open, they didn't know what was gonna happen. His story then was about having courage to stay in the battle, having courage to stay in the fight. And this was during the period that we were going through the whole South Africa battle, the whole divestment battle. So it was sort of encouraging us to have the spirit to stay in the battle, to stay in the fight, to continue to push, to continue to go forward, to have courage in what we were doing, and to keep people together and going through the experience.
And you also mentioned some work that your organization and other organizations on campus did around Black student retention. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a little bit about more about that?
Yeah, the whole Black student retention portion was one of the things where we tried to work with the administration toward trying to figure out a way to work with students that were incoming, Black students that were incoming, to be certain that they had knowledge of what to expect from the experience of College Park in order to be able to remain. Because, what we would learn, and I apologize, I don't remember the exact numbers. It seems as though it was about a 10% or less retention rate of what we had of Black students that were coming into College Park. A large part of the problem was that when the African-American student, Black student came in, you would be one of hundreds, perhaps, of students in a class. And so there was not the individualized attention that you would want from the professor. In addition to that, you didn't feel necessarily included with regards to any of the study groups and study partners and things like that that were in the classroom. And so you were really limited with regards to who you could work with to try to prepare and understand what was going on. While other students may have had the experience of palling up with other students, having upperclassmen that would help them understand what they were going through, if you're part of a student group, a student body of Black students, and your retention rate is 10% or less, you're not going to have the upperclassmen that are there to help give you that information, to help prepare you to get through the experiences that you're going through in that first year. So that was a part of what we tried to put in place. And again, Otis Williams and the Nimboro Cultural Center was just key to that, because what became in place was that we needed to have a tutorial type system that would be put in place for the Black students. And that's part of what Nimboro started with. And remember, this was just a little office. Nimboro wasn't this big cultural center that you see at College Park now. It was a very small building. It had, you know, Otis Williams and Ann Carswell. That was it. That was all that Nimboro actually was. And it was located at the, I can't remember, on one of the top floors of one of the buildings, where, you know, there wasn't much more to it than two offices and a little classroom space. That was it. But from that, you know, we certainly recognized that this would have to be the hub to be able to try to provide a ground of a safe haven for Black students, as well as an experience to try to have Black students have the opportunity to survive at College Park.
While you were a student at College Park, did you live on campus or did you commute?
Both. I started off of campus, living with my uncle who was in Prince George's County in the Oxon Hill, Temple Hill, Sheriff Road area. That's because there was no room for me on campus to be able to live on campus. The following semester, I did come on campus, and from there, I lived on campus the entire time. So, you know, I had the complete campus experience and a little bit of the commuter experience.
Do you remember which residence halls you lived in?
I lived in Caroline Hall for a period of time. I was a resident agent in Caroline Hall, and then lived over in Leonardtown for the remainder in apartments on campus. Excuse me, was it Leonardtown? No. I think it was, I can't remember. It was the apartments that were just behind what was then Frat Row.
Okay. So I also wanted to ask, you mentioned that Nimboro was sort of a safe space for African-American students on campus. Were there other physical spaces on campus where you either felt very comfortable or very uncomfortable?
I wouldn't say I felt uncomfortable anywhere. And I would attribute that to, you know, my Black college experience. There wasn't going to be a feeling of my being uncomfortable wherever I went. But feeling more comfortable, I generally felt more comfortable when we had gatherings, larger gatherings of African-American students. So if it was a, you know, party at Ritchie Coliseum, or if it was just being in the Black Student Union office, that was one of the big places, a big safe haven for us. You know, always felt extremely comfortable in the BSU office. And, you know, we'd always have a lot of conversation, a lot of intellectual, philosophical conversation that went on there. Whatever experiences you had, you could bring it to the BSU office. We could talk about it. We could figure it out. We could, you know, plan, plot, or do whatever we needed to do to address those experiences. But between the BSU and Nimboro, I think those were the two primary areas that I went to for feeling comfortable.
Okay. Were there professors during your time there who stick out to you as being very supportive, or being supportive, or being not so supportive?
You know, obviously, you know, Otis Williams is, you know, was extremely supportive, and is someone that I've mentioned, and you know, we, you know, certainly miss him greatly. He actually had him actually come to my law school to do some performance, because he did blues also. So he was really key at the University of Maryland College Park, in my mind. One of the other professors that was at College Park was an English professor who truly challenged me. And I didn't appreciate the level of the challenge that she presented until I was gone from Maryland. That was Joyce Ann Joyce, Professor Joyce Ann Joyce. And she would teach African-American literature, would teach me African-American literature for a couple of years. And she was, you know, incredibly supportive in terms of her demand of excellence out of me, and what she would push and want in terms of the analytical ability. So I would consider her very supportive in that measure. There may have been some other professors, but none come to mind immediately.
Can you walk me through your memories of the last time you were on campus as you were getting ready to graduate, your last memories of campus as a student?
My last memories of the campus as a student I think when I was preparing to graduate, the friend that very good friend who I was with at the time was Kim Judd. She and I both came out of the School of Liberal Arts, and we actually walked around the campus. Our families were very close, and we just shared the College Park experience of walking across the stage and rubbing Testudo's nose and going over to the student union and just that whole experience of what we had come through and what we had experienced. I can remember thinking to myself that the friendships that I had made with the leaders that were there, Ed Martin from the Black Student Union and Mariella from the African Student Association, how those friendships had just really blossomed and how it had really taken me to another level intellectually with regards to understanding the experience of being an African American in a majority white school or predominantly white institution, and addressing the experiences and having the ability, the nerve, the wherewithal to stand up to the pressure and to succeed. So, as we were, graduating from College Park, those graduation days, all of those feelings are things that were coming back. It's while we were at College Park that one of the first Black astronauts, McNair, with the explosion and died in space. That's what occurred while we were at College Park. So, a lot of thoughts along those lines, certainly resonated with us during those times. The understanding all the shanty town, the marches, and everything else, all that experience was coming through as well.
You just reminded me of something I wanted to ask you before I go into the kind of closing questions. When you think of the university's decision to divest, do you think there have been changes of heart, or do you think it was more entrance convergence? What do you think was at the heart of their decision to divest?
I think that when we as students started raising it and we were demanding it, that there were alumni, there were folks that are on the outside looking in, listening to what we're saying, that said, you know what, these folks have a just grievance, and we're going to stand with them. And the pressure then began to mount to say, you need to do something. This should not be happening. The Washington Post was writing articles about it. The Diamondback was also writing about it. So there was outside pressure that then began to mount, I believe, on the administration that they needed to do something. They needed to act, and that's what I think was the genesis of that divestment process for the University of Maryland.
Once you graduated, what were your next steps? After graduation. I know you went to law school, so did you go directly to law school?
No, right after I graduated, I went to Capitol Hill and I worked with Congressman Tom McMillon, who was another Maryland graduate on the Hill. And I did that for a year. And then I went to law school, University of Baltimore Law School. And then, from there became a prosecutor into private practice and then some things politically. And now I chair a national organization. The Transformative Justice Coalition dealing with all types of voter suppression and all types of other national issues.
Okay. What, if any, has been your relationship, sorry, to the university since you graduated? What's been your relationship with the university?
Since I've graduated, there hasn't been much of a relationship. I've been part of the Alumni Association. I go back to the university when I can. And but to say that there's a strong association, I'm a big supporter of the University of Maryland College Park. I always encourage people to attend. I'm always excited to see the progress that's being made at the university with regards to the academic achievement and educational quality that the university is producing. But I still push for Black students to attend College Park and to be certain that that they're well represented. But to say that I've had the opportunity to play the role of being certain that that I'm there with them, You know, if called upon, no question, I'm there. But I have not really made a concentrated effort to be certain that that experience is as great as I believe it should be. I can recall going back, gosh, I guess it would have been just before the pandemic, so it's probably 2019 or so, to one of the Black homecomings, as we call it. And I had not been to a homecoming on campus for a while. So when we went in 2019 to that homecoming, that was the first time I had the chance to see the new, well, I guess it was new, Nimbuhl Cultural Center, that was just, just huge. I mean, just beyond anything we could ever have imagined when I was at College Park. And to see, just the hundreds of Black students that came to the homecoming celebration, it was just incredibly overwhelming. And heartwarming. It was just a great experience, just a complete great experience.
Okay. And my closing question is there anything you'd like to share about, that's grounded in your time at the University of Maryland as a message to current or future students, particularly Black students?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One of the things that I would say to someone who's interested in coming to the University of Maryland at College Park or asking the question, why should I come to the University of Maryland at College Park? I had the opportunity this year to talk to my goddaughter, who is graduating from high school. I was trying to decide, she's from Georgia, trying to decide whether she's going to go to College Park or to some other institution. And had the opportunity to walk her through the campus to do the whole testudo experience and everything else that's there. One of the things that I said to her and I would share with any other student is this: University of Maryland prepares you for life. It prepares you for what you're going to experience. You're not going to experience, you generally will not experience life in a world, in a bubble of people that look exactly like you. You know, you're coming into the United States, you're coming into an environment where you're going to have many people that do not have your best interests at heart. Some that do have your best interests at heart, the majority of which don't care whether what your interest is. They're just there trying to do their thing. That's what the University of Maryland College Park is going to offer you, is that experience. It's going to give you the opportunity, the training, to have the opportunity to understand what's necessary to get your way through life and to be able to have that foundational piece put in place where you're going to experience some people that think very differently than you, some that experience that think similarly to you, but it's going to be ultimately up to you to define who you are and to traverse your way through it. I think that's one of the things the University of Maryland College Parks offers. What I'd like to see the university do better, and I'm hoping that it has, is certainly in providing the structural necessities that are necessary and that work toward Black students being able to have in place some type of structure to help them to navigate troubled waters that they experience at the University of Maryland College Park. Oh, I can't hear you. You're on mute, Doc.
I forgot to unmute. I wanted to thank you again for taking the time out of your day to be a part of this interview. If I have any follow-up questions, would it be okay to email you?
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Okay. And with that, this interview comes to a close.
Thank you so much, Dr. Turner. I hope you're able to catch up to Mariola and to Ed Martin. They'll be great people for you to interview.
Could you tell me, could you spell Mariola's name?
Not really.
Or her last name?
His last name, Nzua.
Oh, his.
N-Z-U. W-A-H. And I think I found him on Facebook once. So I know he's still out there.
Okay.
M-A-R-I-O-L-A. Mariola Nzua.
O-L-A. Okay. And you said Ed Martin.
And Ed Martin, yes. He was in New York last I heard from him.
Okay. I will definitely reach out and try to find them.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Sure. Thank you. Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.